Hi, folks. Steve Urban here, founder and CEO at RiderFlex. We hope you enjoy today's podcast. And as a reminder, please subscribe to the RiderFlex show for updates on new episodes. And by the way, if you haven't already, check out the book we recently launched, The RiderFlex Guide, Inspiring and Hiring, available for purchase on Amazon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Try the number one marketing platform for small business. Everything you need from design to marketing to CRM. Learn more at marketing360.com. Marketing 360. Fuel your brand.
You're still a good-looking guy, Alex. Look at all that hair you still got up there. How do you manage to keep that hair?
God knows, because, I mean, you know, it really is. It just keeps coming back this way, but it's okay on top. And I get this all. Of course, it's just the past few years, the COVID did it. The gray started coming in.
Okay.
But people say, you know, I know you dye your hair. I'm like, no, my dad had black hair until he was like 70 years old. So it's just one lucky thing I got.
Is that right? Yeah. By the way, for the audience, Alex Greenwood and I go way back to USAO, the University of Science and Arts of Oklahoma, back in the late 80s, buddy. Late 80s. Ugh. I graduated 89. When did you graduate? 91?
April 89.
We graduated at the same time? Oh, hell, I forgot about that. Okay.
Steve, wow. We did, yeah.
Well, you graduated faster because you were a lot smarter than me. It took me longer.
No, I was an idiot because, I mean, seriously, I caught meningitis that last year. I was an idiot. I was taking too many hours. It was just crazy. I shouldn't have done it.
Yeah, that's because you were a year or two behind. What'd you graduate in, like 2.5 years, 3 years?
I graduated high school in 86.
Okay.
But we were on a trimester. For folks who don't know, we were on a trimester at the USAO. So you could go round, you know, and I was too dumb not to do that. And I was broke and I didn't want to borrow too much more money. So I got out of there.
USAO in Chickasha, Oklahoma. Now, you went to school up in the city, Oklahoma City, like Dell City or something like that, I think.
That's correct. Wow. Good memory. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then I actually went to high school in Chickasha, didn't leave town for college.
Right.
You know, I'm sure you reflect on it all the time, right? I do too. Most people reflect on college. I mean, a lot of fun times, a lot of crazy times, a lot of growing up, a lot of growing up. I didn't party at all, though. Now, see, Alex partied all the time. I was at the library every afternoon. Right, Alex?
Oh, my gosh. I guess your twin brother was the guy I hung out with a lot then, huh? Yeah.
Man, those were good times.
We had some times. We did. Yeah, and I've grown up a tremendous amount since then. I mean, you know, I look back at myself, not all the time, but when I do, I look back and I'm kind of, you know, I cringe a little. And
help me too.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt. Oh, absolutely. Yes, I was super cocky. I was very demanding. My networking and relationship management skills back then could have been so much better. I was an asshole a lot of times. I have grown way past a lot of that. I mean, my wife still says I'm cocky, but nothing like I was when I was in college. My God, I was terrible.
Dude, we could have started an a-hole club. I mean, I was, we just asked some of the girls I dated. But that's the thing is, I think you and I, one thing I was respected about you, besides you were funny, you were very funny. You were assertive, though. I thought you were assertive about yourself.
Assertive is a nice word.
Well, you know, I mean, you were confident and you were assertive and you weren't going to like take any guff. And I like that, you know, but I don't know. It's just this journey, you know, 30 plus years, you know, where you just kind of learn, you know, this is the way you could have done that better. But there are some, you know, Steve, there's so many people who go through this life who don't apparently have the self-awareness to do that. So
it's so true. I'm very much, I know what my, sins were back then. And I also, I'm sure you're like this. And now that we're in our 50s, I'm very comfortable talking about what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And I readily admit what I'm not good at.
Oh, yeah, man. If I've kind of developed this wonderful little cottage industry with myself about, you know, cataloging the things I'm just, things that I'm just not. But I think when you own your own business, you really have to, I've been in business 13 years, Steve, and one of the main things I learned was is I can't do it all. And by the way, when I try to do it all, I end up, instead of doing two or three things really well for my clients and for myself, I do a bunch of things in a really crappy way.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's just, that's not a recipe for success. And I don't mean to talk just about my business, but I mean my entire life too. There are aspects of me as a husband, as a father, as an extended family member, you know, that are constantly need work. But the other thing I've learned too is I try not to overextend myself. And I've realized there's a little mantra I have, which sounds like a negative mantra, but please take it the way I mean it. No is a complete sentence.
I like that. Steve, I'm going to use that. I like that.
I bet you get that. Okay. I serve on a community board. My wife serves on two. We have a daughter. She's 14. We have all, you know, I didn't have kids till later. So my, you know, I'm the old dad and all that, but you know, and when you're out in the community, or it could be your church or whatever, you just get all these people who are like, hey, I need you here. Can I pull you here? And you have to finally, or you lose your mind. You have to say, yep, I really can't do that right now. And that was hard for me. That was very hard for me.
That's because your work ethic is super strong. And that goes all the way back to when you were in college. I'm not surprised you turned out to be an entrepreneur and leader and a business owner and doing all the things you did. None of it surprises me. I mean, shit, I thought you were going to be governor of Oklahoma or something, probably. I mean, I knew you were going to be successful way early on. As soon as you came onto campus, I was like, okay, this guy right here has got his shit together for sure. And you were in leadership roles right away because you were in student government and all kinds of stuff back then.
Yeah, and bear in mind, I got my ass handed to me in student government, though. I don't know if you remember that. I was the first student president impeached and removed from office.
I forgot about that.
Thank you for forgetting. I have a newspaper. Do you remember The Trend? Is that the name of the paper?
Oh,
We had a sketch artist, and there's a sketch artist of you, Steve, doing this.
Okay, now I do remember that. Now I remember. Yes. Okay, now I remember.
And not that I think it's funny now, but at the time, but it was like this little shit who was our VP, he just totally railroaded me. When I had the aforementioned meningitis, I was out. They found some little $50 thing where I had said that we would, as a student government, we would pay $50 so Jerry Holt could show Phantom of the Opera.
I couldn't have told you those details. I'm surprised you remember that. Wow.
Well, I mean, you get impeached or removed from office, you kind of remember something. But the thing that was so funny was it just didn't get through the Senate appropriations. So I just thought I could take it out of the presidential budget because there's a little fund the president had. And they just said they trumped that up as like I did some big
translation students having nothing else to do. Who was the person driving that? Do you remember?
My VP, I've blocked him. He's just this little squirrely looking dude. And he just had it in for me from moment one. I don't remember his name.
I wonder what his name, I probably would remember.
But back to Steve, my arrogant attitude at times and
mine too. Yeah.
I'm sure that didn't do me any favors with anybody. And a lot of that, of course, easy to see it, that often covers up some insecurity, and I had a lot of it. I was the first person in my family to go to college.
Same.
I borrowed every penny and worked for everything, you know. Yep. And I was scared that, you know, I'd fail or something, you know. So I just came on strong like bull, right? Just like, you know what I'm saying, right?
Same, my friend. Came from the same. If it makes you feel better, now I got fired from being an RA, a resident assistant. I lost that job. I got fired because I kept sneaking girls into my room.
Big shot.
Do you remember the dorm parent? His name was Glenn, I think. Glenn was after Chaz Evans. Glenn was his name.
Yes.
And Glenn was like, and plus, I think, what else did I do? Were you there when we like slept out on the president's lawn because we didn't have air conditioning and we were protesting all that? Were you with?
I don't know if I slept out, but I got into the meeting with the then VP, and he told me to watch my tone with him. I remember.
Yeah. So yeah, I was in there mouthing off, and I remember Glenn was like, "Hey man, you keep dicking around, you're not going to get this RA job next year," and you know. He was right.
Well, they have a saying now, and I won't say it here, but it involves the letter F and around and find out. And that's what I think we did, both of us in our own way. But
learned so much, though. What a great learning experience, and wouldn't change it for the world. Like, you know, yeah, wonderful place to grow up and experience life.
You know, people say, what school did you go to? I'm proud. I went to a state school, a quality state school. Did you see that John Fever just retired as president there? I sent a little note to him. I couldn't be more proud to be a Drover. And I went on to OU for grad school. And
I saw that. Yeah, congrats.
Thanks. Well, I got hired out of there to go write for the Tulsa World, but I also had a relationship that was imploding. And so that didn't last terribly long. And I kind of came back tail between my legs and went and started up a weekly newspaper. I was hired to do that in El Reno. So slept in the back room for months and started this paper. So I was... Steve, I was doing that thing I did at Chickasha, man. I came in and I acted like I knew what I was doing. I faked it till I made it. And the paper was a big success. And then it got sold and I had to start over with a new career. It was just hilarious.
Now, when did you get married and have kids? And when did you start a family?
I had a starter relationship that didn't end well, but I got married to my wife, Stephanie, in 2006, and we had a daughter in 2008, and we've been great. She's in corporate PR for Oracle, and we're both PR people, but she's always been corporate side, you know, Sprint, Black & Veatch, Burns & McDonnell, and all that stuff. Doesn't matter. Now she's with the Oracle. And so we met at a conference. I was at a conference in Houston and she was at the same conference. And long story short, here we are. It's just crazy. I can't believe it.
And how old's your daughter?
14.
She's 14. Well, you still got a teenager at home, man. That takes a lot of energy.
Oh man, why didn't somebody warn me? Why couldn't I have found the right woman earlier? My gosh. Yeah. You got kids, brother?
They're all grown. Yeah. I had two sons from my first marriage. One of them's 31, the other one's 29. And then my current wife, Kim, who I've been married to for 20 years, she had two children from her first marriage, but all four of them are grown. So we have two granddaughters, matter of fact.
Oh my goodness.
I'm Pawpaw.
That's good. I like it. That's cool. Yeah, I can see you being a Pawpaw. That's pretty cool.
I have gotten really, way softer than way softer. I let shit go now that I never would have let slide way back in the day.
that's so funny. Yeah. That's something I had to learn too. It took me a long time. I just stopped being so combative in general, and just listening more, listening more and processing, because I was told by more than one person throughout my life that I actually, when I can shut my mouth for a little bit, I'm a fairly empathetic guy. And it's served me well, because I'm not the smartest guy and I'm not the most connected, I'm not the most connected, but I do seem to connect well with most people.
Yeah.
And I think being in public relations and marketing, that's been a kind of a minor superpower for me.
Yeah. I mean, congratulations on everything you have built and everything that you have done. We've stayed connected, over the years, and I'll see you'll pop up in my feed and I'll click on your stuff. And I'm like, what's Alex doing? How's Alex doing? And so, really congrats, man. By the way, for the listeners, let's go ahead and get some of this in here. So your PR firm first, talk about it. Give us the overview, how to find you. I know the URL is alexgpr.com.
Yeah.
Give us the overview of your business for the listeners, if you don't mind, Alex, go for it.
Well, if I don't want to bore anybody too much, and by the way, congrats on RiderFlex, brother. This is impressive.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Well, recruiting is our day job. The podcast is our night job.
Well, you do both very well, and I was telling you offline or earlier that I was catching some of you. I was catching up on some of your vids, and I love the one I retweeted, the one about how to cancel a meeting properly. Because man, people need to learn that one, bro.
Seriously.
Well, AGPR, it's funny because it's I had a client who got all the way to hiring me, where she said, "Wait a minute." I said, because I introduced myself to her staff and. I said, I'm Alex Greenwood. That's probably why it's called AGPR. She goes, wait a minute. We're in agriculture and we thought it was ag PR. Are you telling me? I mean, she was serious. It was hilarious.
But then you said, yes, I can do ag PR. It's all good.
I, of course, you know that I did that. I just pivoted, but I got home to my wife and I'm like, I'm gonna believe this shit. But anyway, no, AGPR, I started it 13 years ago. It's funny, I've had a lot of careers, Stephen. It's funny you said I was gonna be governor. I had an uncle who called me governor. You know, I ran for legislature in Oklahoma a couple times.
Okay. Oh, see, I knew there was something in there. I remember that. Okay, yeah. Wow. Oh, wow, I forgot all about that.
Yeah, I almost unseated my first time I ran, I almost unseated incumbent, pretty popular incumbent, and did real well. And then the next time I ran again, and well, let's just say that Jimmy Carter had his Billy Carter, and I had a situation similar.
I see.
It didn't work out. I'll leave it there, but that's okay. It's all patched up. But
you don't want to talk about a family member on the podcast? I mean, come on,
yeah, I probably better not. I don't know. He doesn't like me much as it is, but I did that, and I just kind of, you know, it's a journeyman, but I was, my point is that probably with, I told you I'd done the newspaper bit, but my first PR job was at the Murrah Building disaster. I was at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. And so we were the hospitals that received all these victims. And I was on the PR staff. I got loaned over to the hospitals. It's the first crisis communications experience I'd ever experienced. And my God, it's thankfully in my life never been that bad again. Mm-hmm. But it gave me that year of that, basically gave me a crash course on that. And I kept in the back of my mind, I kept thinking, you know, someday I might want to do my own thing and not be on staff, but I knew it'd take a while and I had other plans. But anyway, I got through a career and I bumped around PR, nonprofit, healthcare related, higher ed. And my last job though, I was a TV station. I was vice president of the local PBS station here for about 3 years, and it was a good job, but I felt restless. And I don't know. You know what? I'll be honest with you, Steve. I've probably averaged 3 years was about the best I averaged on a job. And it wasn't because I got canned or anything like that. I just got restless or bored. And I just now I can rationalize it maybe and look back and go, well, maybe I just wasn't doing what I was meant to do. I don't know. But anyway, I left that TV job foolishly right when my daughter was born, but and started AGPR. But the good thing about that, though, is I got to spend a lot more time with my daughter when I wasn't so busy and I could flex my time. It's not like now, you know, that was 14 years ago. And even then it was tougher, I think, to do those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But AGPR, we cover the waterfront more or less, but we've done everything from Fortune 1000 companies all the way to solopreneurs, helping them do everything. Strategic communication, media relations, executive council, crisis communication planning. I mean, I'll do active, we call it active crisis. For example, if something blew up, somebody on your staff did something they shouldn't have, or a client did or whatever, and it blew back on you, you might call me and say, oh, Alex, and I'll do that. I'll help with that. But what I prefer to do is get with the clients and help them build a plan that they can put on the shelf and take off every quarter and look at and say, okay, is everybody got this procedure under control? Okay. Oh, did somebody, you hear this all the time, right? Did somebody go with RiderFlex and leave us? Who do we replace that person with? Cause they've got to do this part of the plan. So that kind of thing. I love doing that. Content creation, social media strategy, all that stuff. I love it. And I've always been kind of an early adopter of things like social media, podcasting. I've podcasted off and on since 2006. I enjoy that. And I enjoy though, I think what I love most about running my own shop, though, is like beyond the fact that it's my skill set to help people tell their story I'll just be straight up, Steve. I mean, you've known, we knew each other in school, and I'm sure you can tell I'm a pretty similar guy, but I've improved, I think, some ways. But I am just who I am. And running your own shop, you're kind of free to be a little more, I don't want to say idiosyncratic makes me sound like a weirdo. I just mean, I can be myself and not be super corporate. I can just be like, hey, yes. You know,
so wonderful, isn't it?
Right. What you see is what you get. You know, I'm a little goofy at times, but that doesn't mean that sounds dumb. It's like, oh, you're a crisis guy and you're goofy at times. Well, trust me, during a crisis offline, you want me a little goofy. You need a little goofy. When I say goofy, I just mean, I take my job seriously, but I don't take myself terribly seriously anymore because I spent first 40 years of my life doing that. And it's boring. So I've loved that. So we do that. AlexGPR.com, and I'm all over the social medias and stuff like that. So.
And they would call you for either I want to improve my presence or I need to put out a fire. Both.
Both. Well, for example, I have two clients that are healthcare clinics. One of them was doing really well, but they rolled out a line of aesthetic stuff like hair restoration, laser treatments, and skin stuff and all that. And they want to roll that line out. Alex, would you help us do that? And we can't seem to get any traction with their SEO. And I'm not like an SEO guy, but there's some simple things that can be done. These SEO companies often get people kind of wrapped around their own axle and spending a lot of money when it typically can be some minor stuff. And we've already had some effect there. And then I've got another one who had another client who's had some challenges with their what they're doing. And we just come in and we like look at reputation, say, okay, well, here's some things we can do to improve your reputation. Here's some things to pivot the story. I don't say spin, I say pivot away from perhaps, and I'm not saying this is about these two I just mentioned, but let's just say if I had a client who had some stuff go down and they're like, you know, we want to move beyond that in a way that, you know, shows that we've done what we're supposed to do about that. But, you know, it just seems like, you know, in today's atmosphere, it's hard to move on sometimes when a mistake was made or something like that. So we can help with that. But the other thing too, yeah. But if something's burning, you know, first thing, if something's burning, you call the fire department. If it's a PR thing burning, you can give me a call. And if I can't directly help, I've got a person who's a strategic partner, and she's way better at the active crisis than I am. I usually support her. And then when people call her and say, I want a plan, she goes, I don't want to do that, but Alex is the guy to call. So
is she an owner in your business or a referral partner, or how does that work?
She's a referral partner, and okay. She's a former two-time press secretary to two different governors. She knows her stuff. She is sharp as a tack. So if anybody gets into her, and even if I have the capacity to do it, mm-hmm. If it's a really hot situation, I'm just like, you know what? I'm good, but she's great. So, and she says the same about planning. She doesn't want to do the planning. That's just boring to her. I'd rather do the planning.
You were doing the PR you were heavy on, and then what, the marketing agency, not that you're a full blown marketing agency, yes. But the pieces sometimes that fall under a marketing agency, like SEO or whatever, those kind of came along because it just naturally they're like, oh, can you do this too? Is that how that happened?
100%. See, you know this, you work with people all the time, I know, so you know this, but yeah, that's exactly how it did. And I mean, I have some understanding of it, of course, and you know, you don't, I mean, my whole totality of my 32 year career, I've been pulled into marketing roles several times. So you don't do that without learning a few things. But as again, I'm an early adopter, but I also really practice in my marketing, it's heavily PR oriented. Why is that? Because PR is about storytelling and messaging. And I think that sometimes marketing firms don't always get that. They seem to get really excited about some tools, but forget about the message. So I think it's been effective.
No doubt. Do you get a call from HR, legal, or the marketing department, or all three?
All three, because I do internal comms, but HR is often on the phone when something blows up, you know, and I've had more than a few of those, which, you know, it's so funny because it's hard to market that, Steve, because you'll get this. I have to sign an NDA for all these things. Oh, so yeah. I can just talk in the broadest of terms.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I hadn't thought on that part. I hadn't thought about. Yeah. Like you can't just be like, oh yeah, I signed ABC client today because their COO slept with his secretary and she's pissed or whatever. I mean, yeah, I see. Oh, bummer.
And it's a bummer because people, there's literally been times when it's been on, something's been in the news here, like locally.
And you fixed it and you can't say anything.
Can't say jack about it, man.
Oh, that's okay. That kind of sucks a little bit. I hadn't thought.
Yeah, but I charge a lot of money, so it doesn't matter.
By the way, is it like a lawyer? Do you say, okay, hey, look, the retainer, here's a retainer for me to even get started, and then I'm going to bill you from there? Or is it by project, or is it a little all over the place? Or
we suit whatever the client needs. If it's crisis, just to separate that out, because that's kind of unusual, but crisis, if it's an active crisis, there's an hourly rate. They've got to lay down a little bit to start because in those fluid situations, it's real easy for then when the bill comes later, if you don't get something up front, then you're in trouble. Yeah.
No doubt.
So, but in general, for example, if we're one client, we did keywords for their website. We're doing blogging for them. We're doing social posts for them. We're not monitoring because I don't love doing that. I don't like active management of social like 24/7. We'll create the content. They monitor it. That's fine. Okay. Excuse me. We'll do that. And that can be project based or just a monthly retainer. If the longer term it is, the better it is in their interest to do a retainer. And some people are like, oh, that's expensive. I'm like, yeah, but I've got a fee list, which I'll share with any prospective client. And okay. I'm like, this is how it is a la carte. I see. If you want to hire me for any length of time, and you're going to want to repeat certain things every month, it's in, all I ask is a minimum 6 month commitment for the cheaper retained rate. And most people go for it. Yeah,
I see. Yeah. In a service business, it's so critical to get some sort of retainer or deposit up front. It's just way too easy for people not to pay you or pay you late. If you ask me, you know, what are the things you don't like about owning a recruiting firm or owning your own business? Chasing money and chasing invoice. I mean, I just, you know, that part, I have somebody else do it now, but you know, because I'll just call the client and be like, you need to fucking pay the bill. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, you know, and it's always the same thing. It's like, I thought Jessica mailed that. Let me go check with her off. And I've heard it all, man. I've heard it all. You know, it's like, dude, it was net 30. We're on net 90. Just pay me. Like, come on, bro.
have you had to turn many over to collections? I had a couple of times.
Oh yeah. I've had a couple of them. A couple of them we've turned over to collections, not a bunch, knock on wood. I'm grateful, but we have had to a couple of times. It takes up minutes, eats up minutes. Anyway. Okay. Very good. And so the business has what? You have 2 or 3 employees or referral partners, or how do you, what's the size of people?
You got a couple and a half of us that are around all the time. And then I've got referral partners. So it's like concentric rings. At our height, we had like 6 people on staff. And I've just found it's easier just to flex out based on client needs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate making payroll for 6 people, you know, especially if we're not always full.
One of my favorite lines is, more top line revenue does not always equal more profitability, my friend.
Well, you know, when I had 6 people, I was making more money than ever, but I saw so little of it myself, and I'm not complaining. Yeah. It just wasn't working. I think I got up to the, you know, you're going up the hill, you're getting to the top of the mountain, and I got there and there's the money, but I couldn't quite just get it enough to where I could, like, you know, slide down. So yeah, it's funny because I've been rebuilding the company after COVID. We really took a hit, and then I took a break from the company last year and went. I did. I kept the company going, you know, officially, and there were a few minor little things I did, but I took a 9-month contract with a trade publication company. And I'll tell you, it was a great thing to do because I had a regular paycheck for a while, didn't have to worry about, you know, chasing the game, hunting the game, skinning the game, eating the game, and starting over the next day. But I remember at the end of the 9 months realizing why I don't really want to do that ever again as long as I live.
This is exactly what I tell my wife. I'm like, look, here's the deal. If we're starving and we're 2-3 months behind on the mortgage and I have to take a job and work for somebody else, I'll do it, but I don't want to.
No.
I don't want to.
No. And I do you find yourself, and I don't know, I don't want to sound, well, do you find yourself just going, well, why can't everybody do this? You know, why would anybody want to work for anybody? But that's just, it's flipped. It's like the people who want to do this, what we do on our own, it's a very small number compared to everybody else.
Tiny.
When did you know, though, that you needed to run your own shop? I'd love to know.
Yeah, great question. I wish I had done it way earlier, and I wish the bug, so to speak, had hit me earlier. I don't have a lot of regrets in life, but one of them is I wish I'd been an entrepreneur sooner. I think I had went through, I spent 13 years in music retail, for a long time, moving up and had a bunch of big roles. And then after that, I ran a couple of $40 million companies as a CEO, each of them on 3-year gig. But the last one was 3 years flying back and forth from DC to Denver, running a little furniture company. And I was just miserable the whole time. I mean, I was making, like you said, like you were talking about, I was making really good money, more money than I'd ever made, but I just hated my life. I was just like, man, this sucks. I think what did it for me was I just felt restless. I just felt like, man, here I am with the biggest title and biggest responsibility and most money I've ever made, and I'm still not fucking happy. I'm not happy. Like, I want to do my own thing. I just want to do my own thing. And I had worked for enough people by then that had started their own business, because I'm working, reporting directly to the family members or directly to the owner. And then I started thinking, okay, if this guy can do it, I know I can't. You know, I mean, maybe I can't build as big of a company, but I know I can do it. And that's where I got, that's where I got the bug. And now, yeah, man, having to work for somebody, like, if I ever have to call somebody again and ask if I can go on vacation, I'm just going to stick needles in my eyeballs. I mean,
well, you know, you had this great piece you did here on your show. I was watching, I mentioned that earlier about I mentioned the one about canceling meetings, but the other one you did recently about working from home, an update. Yeah. Yeah. And you made this statement that really spoke to me about you don't have to be up in your or down in your office at home with your fingers on the keyboards every second. No. But Steve, here we are Gen X types. And I'm curious if you felt the same way at all. Well, you were CEO, but I wasn't in this role. I had a boss and a couple of bosses. But I felt very, it was very Microsoft Teams dominated. The bell could ding at any second with the boss wanting something or calling you, you know. And I just felt like a prisoner in this little home office that I adore. I hated it in here. I felt like a prisoner in my own home.
Yeah, that sucks. And anybody listening to this podcast that's driving that kind of culture, you really should check yourself, right? Because that is not the kind of work from home culture you want. I tell my team, we got about 30 people involved and about 15 full-time, 15 part-time. And I just, my general motto is this. I'm like, look, I do not care when you work and I don't care where you work from. Just get the job done and get the bulk of the work done. If you want to work Thursday through Sunday, 15 hours a day and take money, I don't care.
Just that's great.
Make sure the client's happy and get the work done. I don't care. I never call them and say, why aren't you at your desk? We have one team meeting a week that is a scheduled meeting where we kind of want everybody to be on there. But beyond that, it's like, do whatever, because I want that. If I want to go to the mountains in Colorado in my Jeep on Friday, guess what? I'm going to go.
Amen. Well, I'm with you. And again, I don't want to make it sound like these, because, you know, folks, you can go look on LinkedIn, see where I've been. But I mean, they're good people and all that. But I think the culture was just trying to haul itself into the 21st century because of COVID. And it just, I think everybody was struggling, but I think this is something I've seen in kind of the companies too, that I've worked with, right. Is, I mean, I'm a contractor technically, or, you know, vendor they work with, but there's a lot of meetings. It could be an email, right. That kind of thing. And there seems to be a lot of that kind of stuff and that kind of culture that you were talking about, Steve, where it just seems like kind of a throwbacky kind of thing. But part of that feeling I had about being stuck here, it was probably my own deal, because I noticed that other people who worked there who were like Gen Z or and millennials, didn't seem to be quite as that way. But I'm Gen X. I entered the workforce at age 21. I just have that work ethic that the boomers beat that into us, Steve.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest, right?
Yes. Oh, my dad's been gone for a couple of years now, but I still, at the age of 55, I'm like, man, if I don't work hard, my dad's going to like look down on me and, I don't know, beat me up or something.
Wow. Well, but it's true. But, you know, so when I work with my people, they're all remote now. We don't have office space. I don't really intend to go back to that. No. That was like $1,500 a month or whatever that I did not need, because clients never came over to the office. The only time anybody ever came to my office was when I was part of a deposition for a client in a lawsuit, which was, well, that was flipping fun. But, you know, the point being, I don't know if you've ever sat for a deposition, man, but avoid it at all costs. Anyway, but so I got out of that. But what I love about this world is too, and I got to say, and I'm careful how I got to be careful how I say this, because I think people who aren't in our position might hear this and think there's back that maybe that's that arrogant thing again, or maybe, you know, but I'm free to tell clients who I just don't think are a fit. I just don't think you're a fit. And what I always do if I get a prospect and it looks like I could help them, but it's just in my gut, I'm getting the red alert thing going on. I'm like, you know, I don't think we can do this, but I know somebody who'd be great. I never leave them just with their hat and say, get out, you know, but also, I've learned too to build into my contracts like a 90-day look back, and we both can't. I'll say to me and the client, if you're not happy with me and we can't fix it, or if we feel the same about you. I'm pretty blunt about it, and I smile when I say it. We can just part as friends there, because 90 days is not going to make or break anybody. But we'll know in 90 days whether we're a good fit as a company helping you help your company.
So refreshing to hear. I encourage any aspiring entrepreneur, especially in the service business, to heed to Alex's advice. Working for a client that you don't like is just going to eventually cause frustration, and it's going to cause you to put out bad work, because you're not going to want to do it. And
you're not.
It's just bad for both sides. You might as well just get out of it. And I know that's easy to say when you have enough clients that you're able to pay the bills. And it's harder to say when you're wondering if your car is going to be outside tomorrow when you wake up or not, you know. So I get it. Like, Alex and I both early entrepreneurs. So I'm sure we both fully understand that. Yeah. Early on, maybe you work for some clients you really don't want to, but boy, I encourage you to get away from bad clients as fast as possible. It's just not worth it. It's just not worth it.
It's not. It'll drag you down. And, you know, sometimes it seems like the clients who you take on, maybe in a role as, okay, this sounds bad, but I don't mean like we're doing you a favor, but, you know, we'll do it. We'll give them a break on the price, and it's supposed to be kind of a small project. Those typically seem to be the squeakiest wheels about every little thing. And I get it. And the reason why I get it is because I've been there, in the sense that when you don't have a lot of money and you're paying somebody else, you want everything perfect. You know, it's the same folks who go to Burger King, and if they can't have it exactly their way, they're going to raise hell at the register. Am I wrong? I don't think I'm wrong.
You're right.
And so I get it. But you have a bigger client who's kind of rolls with it and goes, okay, well, let's try and do this better next time, Alex, on this particular deal. Those are the joy. And the ones who, when I know something got messed up, or maybe something wasn't as successful as I kind of thought it would be, I can go to them and go, look, I don't think that worked really well, and here's how I'm going to fix it for you. And they want to hear that, right? Yeah. But it's the one, sometimes it's the other types of clients who are just, they don't want to hear it. They just want to tell you you're an idiot. Why did I hire you? So you
know. It's you're right. It's usually the ones that pee all over the contract in the beginning during the negotiations. It's what I always tell my partner. I'm like, they got to pee on it. They're just like a male dog. They got to pee on it. You hand them the client, they just got to pee on it somewhere, something. They got to pee on it. You know, they just have to. And then you know what, then it's after they pee on it, then it's a matter of they got to feel victorious in whatever line item they're trying to negotiate, right? And so my partner, he does all the sales. Obviously, you can tell I don't do sales, but we'd never sign a client because I would just be like, fuck off, you know. he's like, they always got to pee on it every time. My point was going to be, we've learned, you know, over time, there are certain clauses. If we have 20 clauses in our contract, there are 5 or 6 of them we'll let go, right? Like, okay, if they want to pee on this one, we're going to make them feel victorious, and we're going to redline that one out. And then that way they're like, hey, negotiated a better deal. You know,
well, you always put in a few things that you can do without, right?
All the time.
But listeners, if you're going to hire me, I won't do that to you, promise.
Yeah. Alex will be fine with you just whizzing all over it and redlining it and sending it to your attorney. Oh, man. Okay. So let's talk about your podcast, man. Hmm. You are the podcaster, not me. I mean, you got two podcasts, and they're great. I want you to tell the listeners a little bit about them. Let's start with PR After Hours, if you don't mind.
No, not at all.
Give us the overview.
PR After Hours is a lot like, well, your show is similar in the sense that, you know, you're giving back, and that's what this show is about. And I initially thought, well, I'll just do this show and I'll give some tips every week, you know, PR tips, and I still do. But then organically, people just started going, well, do you ever do guests? And I'm like, well, once in a while. And I started doing it. And so that was January 2002 or 2020. And now here we are, 2023. Last year, the show, we did 1 year, which was insane, because I do have another show where we were doing 2 guests a week. Actually, it was 1 guest a week and then 1 other small show with me giving tips. And okay, yeah, that's back to me getting meningitis in college because I'm an idiot and I took too many class hours. So I don't do that anymore. We do 2 seasons a year now, 15 to 20 episodes per season tops. Okay. Comes out every Tuesday, PR After Hours, and it's usually interviews. It's news you can use, some tips here and there, and it's goofy old me talking to folks, and it's like this. And by the way, this is what I love about how you do this, because this is how I do my show. It's a conversation. This whole bit about the list of questions, you can tell the podcasters who mean well but aren't real good at it because they have a list of these long. And I mean, it's like I always say to people, you know, and I talk on podcasting a lot, and I'm giving a talk in Philadelphia later a couple of months about this. And one thing I always say is, do not do podcasting if you're going to need a bunch of prompts and you don't think you can get past that. That's not good, because the way I view podcasting is like we're having coffee or we're at a cocktail party, and I don't whip out a little card and hold it in front of me and go, next question. On my other show, Mysterious Goings On, I can talk more about it in a minute, but I had a guest on. He's a best-selling author, John Gilstrap, and he said, Alex, I had fun on your show. And I said, well, thank you. He says, well, you know, it's like some of these people just have a long list of questions. And he says, I could tell everybody I killed Kennedy, and the host would just look at me and go, next question. And you can't do that. You've got to listen, because, you know, I'm sure I've said half a dozen things already where you went pivoted off to something else after what I said, because you're a human being who is doing the right thing, which is listening and not just waiting to speak. That's so right. PR After Hours, we do that. We have guests. We have guests of all stripes. You don't have to have written a book. You don't have to be a CEO. No offense to anybody, but we don't do a lot of like financial planners or insurance agents or real estate agents. And it's simply because, I hate to say it, but if you're the person people avoid on LinkedIn, we're probably going to avoid you.
That's pretty good.
But Steve, you do a show for over a year, you start seeing which shows people listen to and which they don't. And that's sounds mean, and I didn't mean it that way, but I just, you know, come on. So I do that show, and you go to prafterhours.com, and you can see the website for it. I'm real proud of it. Last year we had 266% growth in listenership.
Wow, fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. And it's Anchor is your audio host, and then and that spits it out to just about everything. What about, you're not going to do video? You ever thought about making video or not?
You know, I don't have this. I have a face for radio. You're the good looking
guy. What are you talking about, man? You're a good looking guy. Come on.
Maybe if I lose that extra 15 pounds, but I don't know. I look like my dad. But anyway, I've actually, it's funny you say, I've thought about getting into it. In fact, I'm looking at a good background and or ordering some stuff anyway to do that, but I don't know. There's something about rolling out of bed in the morning, you got a cup of coffee out of King Tut's tomb in your hand, you didn't shower, you're working, right? And then you could just it's 10 o'clock, I gotta record an interview, nobody can see me, it's great. So I don't know. So it's a fun show, but the one that's my baby is Mysterious Goings On, which I've done since 2016, and that's about creativity and writing. And I really love that one.
That is when you're having, so one of them really focuses on marketing and the other one is really about writing and being creative with, All right. And that has guests as well.
Yeah. You know, there's a guest you might know. Do you remember our buddy, Brian from school? He's my roommate, running buddy.
Yes.
He's a product, a very successful product manager and developer in Chicago. He's been on like a couple of times, and it was great because we just talked about creativity away from the, like a computer, creativity, like to create new products and stuff. One of our top listened to episodes, because it's so fascinating. And I love that, but I like interviewing people with creativity, but writing, I mean, here's the thing though. The more writers we interviewed, the more publicists found us. And I know how that works. And we have best-selling authors all the damn time. And I'm proud of that, but I haven't forgotten, you know, where we came from. I also, like, I interviewed a kid in Canada, wrote his first book, like, in his teens. He's on his second, he's like 19 or 18. So everybody in between, newbies, and then people are kind of off in this direction who just talk about creativity. I had a musician on, I've had photographers on. It's kind of tougher to talk about photographers without video, but we manage. And but it's mostly books. And, you know, I've written a few books myself, but I'm not a bestseller by any means, but I love writing. It's an important part of my life. And
any book you want to mention right now that's available on Amazon or from Kindle or anything you want to bring up for the group?
If you're into podcasting, get the podcast option. All right. Oh. It's a tiny little, it's actually not really a full-fledged book. It's more of a little, but you can get it on audiobook, ebook, or there's a little paperback. I wouldn't necessarily order the paperback unless you just love paperbacks because it's small, but it's called The Podcast Option. And it's about my journey as a podcaster. And then I have a mystery series called the John Pilate Mystery Series. There's 8 books. It's spelled P-I-L-A-T-E, like the Roman governor, not like the exercise instructor. So.
And all available on Amazon, if I look it up there?
You can find it all. And my pen name is J. Alexander Greenwood, which was given to me, well, not just by my parents, but by my first editor at the Tulsa World. That was my first byline I got, so I kept it. So,
did you do the audio for yourself? Is it your voice?
I did on the podcast option, but I didn't on the first mystery novel. We've only done one of the mystery novels, and I had a guy do it, and he did a fine job, but we decided that maybe we wouldn't for a while. But yeah, I just felt like, how can you do a book on podcasting and not record your own audio?
Yeah, that would be weird. No, I totally agree. Now, the Mysterious Goings On podcast, is that got its own website as well, or what's the best place to find it?
mgopod.com.
Okay, yeah. Very good. And how many shows did you do there last year?
Golly, I don't know a lot.
So you're doing one or two podcast recordings a week on average, if you include both shows.
But usually I do two when we're in the middle of recording. We do two on Tuesdays for the one show, and then two on Thursdays for the other. And I've alluded to earlier, something's going to have to give on that. Probably if we're staying as busy as we're now, right now we're in negotiations for a South Korean tech company to be their agency of record. If I get that, I am not going to have a lot of time. Okay. It's just the way it's going to be. But yeah, I love it. It's fun. And you know, I've learned a lot about it. And you know, I did a brief stint on the radio back in Oklahoma City years ago. But I've finally gotten better because you just are such a natural. And I look at you and you just come through, and it's like you and I haven't missed a beat, by the way, talking. But I had to realize, just Alex, just be your goofy self, just be who you are. I get, as you can tell, I get very excited, and I love to talk about things.
I love that.
Well, it's because if you don't bring that to the show, people aren't going to listen.
You've already done the thing that's the hardest, which is be consistent for several years.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people, bro, have you met? And they're like, oh, I'm going to start a podcast. And I'm always like, okay, call me in 6 months.
And I mean, this show's been clicking along for quite a while too, right?
Yes. Yes. I think this is our fourth year on the show, which is, yeah. And if you put out one or two episodes a week for 4, 5, 6 years, that, you know, then you probably have a show. But it is very hard to be that consistent for that long. Yeah. Because it takes a lot of time, as you know, right? It takes a lot of time. People, I can't tell you, people will call me, hey, I need some advice when starting a podcast. And I'm like, okay, well, the first thing I want to tell you is, it takes a shit ton of time, way more than you're going to anticipate, and nights and weekends and all the rest of it.
So true. Well, yeah. And I do like limited things. I've got one friend, she's an actress in LA who was on my show on Mysterious Goings On, and we clicked and we're friends, and I do a monthly show with her. Oh. I'm getting ready to do another. There's another guy who I kind of helped advise, but then he launched his show here in town, a music show, and we're doing, we're going to roll it out at the end of the month. It's another monthly show, and it's he is producing it. It's his concept. I am just there as quote talent unquote. I don't have to do a lot. So I said, fine, I'll do that. So
and I don't know, you find time to write, which also takes a lot of time. Yeah. I want to ask you, looking at it, speaking of time, damn, we should have booked 2 hours. As a writer, this is kind of switching gears off topic a little bit. As a writer, I'm fascinated to find out what your thoughts are on this ChatGPT and the advancement of AI. And all of a sudden there's this tool where college kids can, you know, they can just have the screen write it for them. I mean, tell me, Alex, what are your thoughts on this topic?
It's funny, and I'm actually funny. I've booked an expert on this coming up on my show, but it'll be a while. But I've been researching it too. But I'm under some pressure already on the PR side to use this because it is a good tool. But I've tried it out, and I just kind of plugged in things. Well, you know, here's some different things you plug into it, right? And then say, I want a press release about this. But every, you know, and maybe you've got to be, well, not maybe, you have to be extremely good at what you ask for to get more in out of it.
Yes.
But not been overly impressed with it. And I cannot, and I also have a friend who's a professional writer, and he just tried, had it write a short story for him. He plugged everything in and it was a competent story, but that's what all it was at this point, was competent.
Mm.
It lacked that humanity. It just seemed like a lot of cut and paste. It don't get me wrong, I read it. It kind of worked, but I don't know, man. I think right now we're on the edge of Wild West with that stuff. Okay. I'm not at the point where I think it's going to completely take over yet. Although, were I 20, 30 years younger, I'd be concerned, because I think the AI will learn incredibly fast. And the people who are making it will do it. And there will be a point where it'll be a point of no return. And I think particularly people who create content, writers in particular, you know, although artists, photographers are already like really nervous.
Mm-hmm. And software engineers that write code, because it can write code too.
It can just write code. Yeah. So here's the problem I really see, Steve. Okay. And I'm kind of excited to talk to you about this. I'm glad you asked, because your business is about human capital.
Yes.
You're right. You've got to have clients that are nervous about this, or will
sure.
be.
Yes.
But the thing that about this is that we keep hearing, you remember the joke, where's my flying car? You know, it's the future. Where's my, you know, my 4-day work week, you know, which I think is not a bad idea, but the problem with our society, at least in America, our form of capitalism, which I'm a capitalist, I'm fine with that. Yeah. It seems like, though, every time we have a time saving thing, like, okay, work from home. Well, then what happens? This is just like your video today. Yeah, you work for home, all right, and you work a lot more.
That's right.
From home. And that doesn't include, like you said, putting stuff in the dryer and walking the dog and doing stuff just to get up out of your chair that I was too terrified to do, I guess, for a few months on my other job. What I'm really concerned about most, Steve, is it just seems like every time there's an advancement like that, it's an excuse for whomever, or I'll call it the economy, to wring more time out of people. It's like, oh, okay, well, Alex, you don't have to write press releases anymore. So what else can you be doing?
Mm, good point, Alex. Yeah.
Where is this leisure time that technology is supposed to afford us?
Right.
We already know that social media is a cancer on this country and the society in so many ways.
Totally. Totally. That's another hour podcast, by the way.
It is. And I'm sorry. You get me, buddy. I'm so sorry.
Dude, we could do a whole another hour on the, I am in total agreement that social media overall has been bad for society, in my opinion.
Yeah. Overall.
There are some good things about it. And God knows I use it for my marketing for my own business at Riderflex, but overall it has been a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, it was supposed to be the town square, but unfortunately the town square, well, it's like, it's the town square, right? If you can wear a ski mask and just call people names and punch them in the throat. I mean, I have a rule about social. I tell my clients this all the time. I was like, do not, and I break this rule occasionally, but I'm a lot better than I used to be. And by the way, do not social during cocktail hour. But the other thing is, that's my other first piece of advice. The second piece of advice is, I don't say something to somebody on social media I would not say to their face.
Exactly. It's pretty much, if you'll just follow that rule right there, you'll just follow that one, you'll save yourself a lot of heartache and time. You know, I mean, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to have you back on, because we could go down. Well,
I'm gonna have you on my show. You're coming on my show.
Yeah.
You
know, okay. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. We'll do more about ChatGPT. So I just want to say, I'm in total agreement on the social media, and on the ChatGPT, I know we're almost out of time, but I wanted to say, I think now it's moving at light speed, and I think it'll just move faster now. And I'm glad I'm 55, because in another, you know, few years, I'm not going to give a shit anyway. So I'll let all the young kids worry about whether or not robots are taking over, and hopefully they are. Hopefully they are taking over, because I want one of those robots in my house doing stuff for me.
Yes, enjoying that leisure time. But I, for one, am happy to welcome our new robot overlords.
Yeah, I totally agree. I put that out the other day. I'm like, hey, if it can do laundry and unload the dishwasher, tell me where to order one. I'll order one right now.
Yeah, it's all good, man.
Alex, thank you so much for being on the Riderflex podcast, man. I really appreciate it, buddy.
It was a blast. So good to see you again, Steve. Let's don't make it another 30 years, okay?